It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
Good evening, and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years with yours truly this evening and every Sunday evening, 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time. That's 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on blogtalkradio.com and also directly on my website, drmarakarpel.com. And you can hear this evening's show again by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com, and that's drmarakarpel.com. And the link to the podcast will be posted soon after the show or sometime this evening. And for information from this show and updates about the upcoming shows, again, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com, and follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. Want to advertise your business? Send me an email or go through my website, drmarakarpel.com, or call me at 512-626-6973. And my email is drmara@drmarakarpel.com. Tonight's show was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by the bra lady, Sonia Das, helping every woman have a perky day. In Austin, call Sonia at 512-898-9058 or go to haveaperkyday.com. Tonight's show is also sponsored by Live Oak Legacies, committed to helping families capture and preserve the stories, recipes, photographs, and relics held the most dear. Find out more at liveoaklegacies.com. And today is Sunday, May 25th, and it's Memorial Day weekend. I hope you're all having an enjoyable and safe Memorial Day weekend. And thanks for joining us for this special Memorial Day show. And we're broadcasting live from STX Printing in Harlingen, Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley, which happens to be right down the street from the original full-size plaster model of the Iwo Jima Memorial Statue, which is the original for the bronze statue that stands in Washington, D.C., and it's right here in Harlingen, Texas, and we decided that we would do the show from here because that seemed to be the most appropriate place for a Memorial Day weekend show, and we already took some pictures from the Marine Military Academy where the statue stands. And you can go to my Facebook page right now, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years, and I posted a couple of those pictures for you to see. So pretty interesting statue. It's really large, and it's extremely detailed. So I think it's pretty neat. And I want to give a shout-out to my dad and to the father of Art Mendoza, who is the producer of this show, who's right here producing the show tonight, Mr. Mendoza, and to Mr. Hardcastle, the father of Chris Hardcastle, whose space we're using tonight. They all served in World War II, so I want to give a shout-out to you guys. You're, you know, really special, so you're still here. And we're glad to have you here. And again, as I mentioned, Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment is the producer of this show, and he's here doing the production engineering for tonight's show, and we'll be answering your calls if you call later with questions. So good evening, Art. And if this is the first time that you are tuning in, I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City, and I practice in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas and in Austin, Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and caregivers. And for the past few years, I have been evaluating veterans for PTSD. And you can listen to the podcast of my radio show that was on local radio in Austin, Texas. And that those podcasts and all of the podcasts from my blog talk radio show are at my website, drmarakarpel.com. Again, drmarakarpel.com. And we have a very special Memorial Day weekend show with an awesome lineup of guests, as usual. In the first hour, we will be joined on the phone by longtime Boston Globe economics and finance reporter, former reporter for The Economist, and current researcher for the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, Kimberly Blanton. And Kim has joined us several times when I was on local Austin radio, and she will be back on this evening to talk about issues regarding finance and dementia. And then stay tuned for special Memorial Day weekend guests in the second hour when we'll be joined by one of the legendary heroic Tuskegee Airmen, the World War II heroes who were portrayed in George Lucas's movie Red Tails. Captain William Gray will be joining us from right here in Texas. And also in the second hour, internationally recognized violist, recording artist, composer, holistic healer, and first violist for the New York Pop Orchestra, whose CD, Timeless Being, has been ranked number one on multiple charts. Dr. Karen Olson will be joining us from New York to tell us about her latest project, and we'll be playing some of her music. And since this is the first party weekend of the season, I would like to start off with talking about alcohol, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So if you have any questions throughout the show, I will have time to take your questions. So if you have questions or comments for me or my guests, please feel free to give a call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can email or tweet your questions to me, and I will read them on the air to my guests. And my email address, again, is drmara, D-R-M-A-R-A, at drmarakarpel.com, D-R-M-A-R-A-K-A-R-P, like Paul, E-L, or send me a tweet to M-A-R-A-E-K. So as I mentioned, since this is Memorial Day, the first official party weekend of the season and a big weekend for barbecues and beer, I thought this might be a good time to talk about alcohol, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Of course, we all know about using good judgment regarding drinking and driving, meaning don't drink and drive and have a designated driver if you're going to be drinking and then need to drive somewhere. So having said that, I won't be talking about that anymore during the show. We all know that drinking and driving don't mix. What I would like to talk about are some of the benefits of drinking alcohol. Since not too long ago, some scientists have actually suggested that some alcohol in moderation can be beneficial for our health. And just how much is actually beneficial, we'll talk about. I would also like to talk about the health and mental health risks of alcohol. As I said, what is moderation anyway, and when do the risks outweigh the benefits? And I'm going to touch a little bit on alcohol and aging. And, you know, recently the U.S. dietary guidelines have given official permission for many adults to drink one or two drinks a day, since the recent studies have found moderate drinking to be beneficial for keeping the mind sharp as we age, as well as to decreasing the risk of diabetes or heart disease. In fact, the benefits for both men and women have been documented, with studies finding that moderate drinking can raise the levels of good cholesterol in the blood, which can lower the risk of heart attacks. And studies have found that the good cholesterol levels can be increased by as much as 20% when drinking moderate amounts of alcohol, along with eating a healthy diet and exercising regularly. So just drinking and then eating fried food and all kinds of things that we know are bad for you is not going to be beneficial. The research has also found that moderate drinking can increase insulin sensitivity, which in turn can reduce the risk of diabetes. However, don't get too excited about that one, because alcohol also contains a lot of non-nutritional calories, which can lead to weight gain, which in turn is linked to the development of type 2 diabetes. So again, moderation is important, and we'll talk about what that means. A study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2005 found that women who regularly drank moderate amounts of alcohol demonstrated a 23% lower risk of mental decline when they were compared to non-drinkers. The research has also found that in order to receive the benefits, it does not have to be red wine that's consumed, as we were told in the past, but it can be any type of beer, wine, or liquor that's consumed. So what is moderation, or better yet, what is the optimal amount to drink in order to possibly derive these benefits? Well, both the American Heart Association and the U.S. Dietary Guidelines specify that moderate drinking is one drink for women and two for men per day. And keep in mind that this is specifically the amount to drink in a single day and not the average for the week. So this doesn't mean drinking 7 drinks in one day once per week for women or 14 drinks in a day once per week for men. Is really maximum of 1 or 2 in a day. And one drink is specifically 5 ounces of wine, 12 ounces of beer, or 1.5 ounces of 80-proof distilled liquor such as vodka. And drinking more than this amount does not bring more benefit and, in fact, will not only produce these benefits, but will also cause more problems, which I will discuss in a little while. When we drink alcohol is also apparently important. So timing, as usual, is important. And several studies have found that drinking alcohol on an empty stomach can increase the chance of developing hypertension or high blood pressure. When alcohol is consumed with a meal, on the other hand, it can actually slow down how long it takes to empty your stomach, and that can decrease the amount of food that we may eat in a meal, which helps us to maintain a healthy weight. All of the experts, however, do say that already drink, the benefits of moderate drinking are not enough to make it a good idea to start drinking. So if you don't drink, it's really not beneficial to start drinking. There are many other ways to prevent chronic diseases that don't have the health risks of alcohol, such as eating a healthy diet, which we've talked about many times on this show, engaging in regular exercise, maintaining a healthy weight, and, of course, not smoking. So now let's talk about the risks. First, I'd like to talk about the health risks of alcohol consumption, especially when more than the suggested amount are consumed. As I mentioned just before, alcohol is very high in calories and very low in nutrients. And therefore, alcohol can lead to weight gain. And the risk of obesity far outweigh, excuse the pun, any benefits of alcohol consumption, as obesity is linked to type 2 diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and many other chronic and severe health problems. And those people who try to keep the weight off by substitute eating with the calories of alcohol, so they drink and instead of eat in order to keep from gaining weight, will end up severely malnourished, which leads to a high risk of serious and chronic illnesses, cognitive impairment, depression, and destruction to just about every organ of the body. So don't try to keep from gaining weight by drinking instead of eating. And the health risks of drinking excessive alcohol include several different types of cancer, pancreatitis, cardiovascular disease, stroke, brain shrinkage, cirrhosis of the liver, miscarriage, and fetal alcohol syndrome of an unborn child, just to name a few. Also, we know that alcohol is addictive or can lead to at least a psychological dependency when it's consumed excessively and frequently. And any alcohol at all, is contraindicated, meaning it's dangerous for people with certain health conditions, such as people who have a history of stroke that was caused by a brain hemorrhage. people who have any type of liver disease or pancreatic disease or any evidence of precancerous changes in the esophagus, larynx, pharynx, or mouth. And also, if anyone in your family was or is an alcoholic, you would be best advised to be very cautious about consuming alcohol. And, of course, if you're pregnant, it's important to stay away from alcohol altogether. Also, certain medications don't mix with alcohol and can be very dangerous or even life-threatening to drink alcohol at all with these medications. So if you're taking any prescription medications or over-the-counter medications, it's important to check with your doctor or pharmacist before drinking any alcohol. And often people think that over-the-counter medications are completely safe and don't think about whether or not they can drink alcohol with them. And I need to tell you that that is completely untrue. It's completely false. If you look at the label on a bottle of, let's say, Tylenol or some generic form of Tylenol, for example, it says not to drink alcohol as a medication, and that's very important to heed that warning because even having one drink with one dose of Tylenol can cause damage to your liver. That combination of alcohol and Tylenol, acetaminophen, is very dangerous for your liver, and combining alcohol and aspirin can increase the risk of GI bleeding. So do be careful with both prescription and over-the-counter medications. And what about alcohol and aging? Well, Dr. Oz tells us that excessive consumption of alcohol can actually speed up the aging process. First of all, alcohol can cause premature wrinkles. It causes loss of collagen in the skin, loss of elasticity of the skin, redness, dehydration, and puffiness. And vitamin A is a very important antioxidant that helps us to regenerate new cells in the skin and the body, and it's important for the production of collagen, which keeps our skin elastic and young-looking. And alcohol has the tendency to deplete our body's store of vitamin A, therefore causing more wrinkles and thinner skin. Also, alcohol is a vasodilator, which means that it widens the blood vessels that bring the blood to your face, and this can cause puffiness or swelling in the skin of your face. And over a long term, the increased width of the blood vessels in your face will lead to the loss of skin tone or blotchy skin, and the blood vessels can burst, causing permanent redness, especially around the nose area. So it's not a pretty picture. Also, alcohol is a diuretic, so it can cause dehydration, which will dehydrate your skin, causing wrinkles. And let me just touch briefly on the few couple of minutes that we have left on the mental health effects of drinking. What I've seen in my practice with my clients as well as in evaluating vets for PTSD and other emotional issues is that many times when people are experiencing emotional distress as well as sleep disturbance, they reach for alcohol to try to self-medicate, to try to find relief from their symptoms. So what's wrong with that, you might ask? Doesn't alcohol calm anxiety and help with sleep? Well, the truth is that alcohol might give a feeling of calm and ease in the short term right after drinking it, but it can actually backfire in the long run when it's used that way. And one way that it backfires is that using alcohol as a way of dealing with emotional issues can lead to dependency on alcohol and an increased risk of alcoholism and abuse of other substances. And actually, there was a study that was conducted by the National Institute of Alcohol and Abuse and Alcoholism, and it found that 13% of study participants with anxiety disorders who reported using alcohol to find relief from their symptoms developed an alcohol problem over the course of the three-year study, compared to only 5% of those participants who did not use alcohol as a medication. Also, alcohol, although in the short run it eases your feeling of anxiety, it actually causes a stress reaction in the body when we drink it in excess. And this is because alcohol is metabolized differently than other foods and drinks, and it takes a lot more energy of the body to produce to metabolize a large amount of alcohol, and this stresses the body out. So while we might feel relaxed after having a drink, the feeling of stress is actually increased once the alcohol wears off. What about depression? Well, alcohol is a nervous system depressant. So in depressing the nervous system, it actually contributes to or causes depression when the intoxication wears off. So also, while you're intoxicated, the risks are numerous if you're depressed, anxious, or angry, because alcohol causes very poor judgment and impulsive behaviors. So those behaviors that you might not engage in, if you took time to think about them with a clear mind, are things that you might do impulsively while drinking that it has irrevocable consequences. So I strongly advise that if you're feeling out of sorts, avoid the alcohol completely while you work through these difficulties. And if you notice or people around you notice that you're more irritable when you drink, especially the next day, even after one drink, then you might want to consider even having that one drink. And I did talk last week about sleep and why sleep, alcohol is a very bad sleep medication because it actually interferes with receiving the full, getting into the full cycle of sleep, which is what you need in order to feel rested. And it actually can wake you up in the middle of the night, or even if you sleep through the night, you have a tendency to not wake up feeling rested. So it's not a good sleep medication. So bottom line, while alcohol may have some benefits when consumed in moderation, these benefits don't increase with the more that we drink. And in fact, there are many adverse effects of drinking in excess, so or to drink to relieve emotional symptoms, and or drinking when taking medications or dealing with certain medical issues. And it can cause us to age more quickly. So I will end by saying on this holiday weekend, enjoy a drink or two with a meal if you don't have a health issue or emotional issue that makes it unadvisable to drink. But drink in moderation, use common sense with regard to safety, and continue to eat healthy and stay active and have fun. So we're going to take a brief break, just about a minute. We already have our next guest on the line. Stick around. Finance and retirement researcher at Boston College, Kimberly Glanton, will be joining us to talk about finance and dementia, and we'll be taking your calls, tweets, or emails with your questions. You can give a call toll-free at 855-345 4720, send a tweet to M-A-R-A-E-K or an email to Dr. Mara at drmaracarpel.com, and I will read your questions on the air. All right, so come right back.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient. And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about essential body wear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com. And have a perky day. Gravity.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaracarpel.com. And now on the phone joining us from Boston, we have longtime Boston Globe economics and finance reporter, former reporter for The Economist, and current researcher for the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College, Kimberly Blanton. And as I mentioned earlier, Kim has joined us several times when I was on local Austin radio, and she is now back on this evening's show to talk about issues regarding finance and dementia. And if you have any questions for Kim, give a call at 855-345-4720, or you can send me an email or a tweet, and I will read those questions to Kim on the air. My email is drmara@drmarakarpel.com, and my Twitter address is M-A-R-A-E-K. So, Kim, are you there?
Yes. Good evening. How are you, Dr. Karpel?
I'm great. I just want to remind you there's a slight delay when we speak to each other this way.
Okay.
How are things this evening in Boston?
Well, we had a little bit of an inkling of spring possibly today, which, you know, I told you I used to live in Dallas, so I know how the weather is in Texas. You're full into your beautiful weather. So we're hoping tomorrow it's going to be actually be in 80 degrees. We're all very excited about it. So.
Well, I am in the Rio Grande Valley, and it's in the 90s right now.
Yeah. That sounds pretty good, actually. But I'm sure that everybody down there is probably has their air conditioner on. So we're hoping to get to that point sometime.
Right. Okay. So Kim, we were going to talk this evening about finance and dementia. And
yes.
One of the blogs that you wrote in April, you brought up some of the financial issues that I'm kind of familiar with personally, as my parents are facing issues about making decisions about whether to live in a supportive senior community or to age in place. And can you talk about these from a financial perspective as well as with regard to making these kind of big financial decisions when one spouse has developed dementia?
Yes, I'd love to. And you know, before I get into answering your specific question, I thought it might be good to sort of start the show, and I'm sure you have data of your own since this is your psychology is your field, but we've done some of the people we've written up some of their research online, but looking at sort of the prevalence of dementia, and I thought it would be interesting just so first I'm going to talk about just dementia, which is, you know, kind of what I'd call full-blown dementia in terms of percentages of the population. One of the studies that we wrote about was that only 5% of people in their, say, early 70s have dementia. So it's pretty small. By the time you're up in your 90s, it's more than a third. So, you know, now dementia is the more extreme case, but if you look at just cognitive impairment, not dementia, not all the way to the extreme case of dementia, but just cognitive impairment, something like 16% of people in their early 70s have it. And by the time you're in your 90s, it's more than a third, maybe 39% or so. And then one other thing is, you know, about half of adults in their 80s either have dementia or they have cognitive impairment. And there's, you know, slowing down just kind of the natural aging process, which is, you know, I'm going through it, we're all going through it. But I think what happens is when it mixes with finance, it can be, you know, you can start making mistakes and they can be really costly mistakes. And I think that's part of the danger. And one of the things that happened, you mentioned your parents, once the study that you had referred to, they actually looked at couples. And in a couple, you know, sometimes you have 50-50, both people share equally, but a lot of times, say doing the dishes after dinner, right? But a lot of times, when you get into financial stuff, it tends a lot of times to be one person doing it, often, not necessarily, but often the man. And what happens is some research has found that about 80% of married couples, older Americans, who had been in the charge of their household finances, they continue to manage them even after they've been tested and that they reveal that they're either approaching or already experiencing dementia. So the real, the big, yeah, that's a lot. And the big point is, I think it just, it takes a while to, A, recognize it, acknowledge it, and then, you know, do you actually deal with some of the consequences? And I think you probably are a better person to talk to that specifically, but about the psychological side of it, but it does have an impact on the financial side.
Sure.
Especially as things have gotten more, finances have gotten more complicated. We've talked about this before, but in the old days, you had a pension and they sent you a check every month, right? You know, IBM or some company in Texas, they'd send their employer a check every month. Well, that's not the way it works anymore. We've all got 401ks and they have to be managed. And, you know, you have to decide things, as you mentioned, about whether to go into, you know, a senior community or aging in place, that kind of thing. And there's a lot about that that people generally, you know, it's very hard to analyze. And maybe it's hard to do it even when you're, you know, in middle age and you're at your peak, which I'm way past that, but when you're at your peak, cognitive ability is much less when you're getting, you know, when you're slowing down a little bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is there any research about, you know, the outcome of that or the... the decision-making about that?
Yeah, well, you know, there is research showing, you know, that people become more vulnerable to fraud, for example. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, that can clearly be disastrous. That can clearly have disastrous consequences.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the interesting things that happens and the reason people are vulnerable to fraud, even though they're kind of becoming a little slower, a little more cognitive impairment, you know, you're not quite as quick on your feet, but they're very confident, still very overconfident in their ability, so they may not be totally recognizing. But, you know, what about that issue, I guess, as a psychological issue? I was wondering, can you talk about that a little bit, sort of, you know, recognizing your impairment and adjusting for it is probably a big thing to get over.
Well, you know, the problem with cognitive impairment is very often there is a lack of awareness on the part of the person who has it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, if it really is dementia, the person who has it is not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in situations where people are depressed, and because they're depressed, they're having some cognitive impairment, they're more likely to recognize it, but that's a reversible type of situation.
Right.
So in fact, that's one of the clues that it might not be dementia, it might be depression. If the person
mm-hmm.
complains that their memory is failing, you know, sometimes that's true, but a lot of times it's more a sign of depression. So if it really is dementia, they tend to have lack of awareness. And then if you have a couple and one person has dementia, I think a lot of times there's, you know, number one, there's denial on the part of the spouse.
Yep.
They don't want to think that their spouse has dementia, and they make
mm-hmm.
all kinds of excuses for them.
Yep.
And the other part of that is that they see them every single day, so it's very difficult for them to really notice the change. You
right.
know, it's much
that's,
easier
yep.
when somebody doesn't. You come in and you say, "Wow, that's a big change from the last time that I saw them." But when it's incremental like that, the partner tends to not notice it.
Yeah, and you don't perceive it. And so then if your partner has been managing the finances, you may not be, you know, as concerned as you should be, I guess, right? Because you're not really perceiving the cognitive issues that are developing, I guess. Because I think once you get into, you know, I mean, and this is a continuum, right? And you're an expert in this, but this is a continuum. But when you get to the point where, you know, you're making bad decisions about day-to-day things, I think that making decisions about bad financial decisions can happen before that, because these are very complicated things to sort through, even when you're at totally at the top of your game. And I
right.
think You know, and so that's another issue. I wrote something that I don't think I sent you this article to read through some of my stuff, Mara, but, you know, and I'm also working on another blog post. For example, people have a really hard time sort of understanding the finances of, say, long-term care planning, right? You mentioned your parents trying to figure out. Have your parents actually decided what they're going to do? Are they thinking about whether to go into some senior community or to age at home, or have they decided?
This has been a decision in progress for the past 3 years. They have not decided. And part of it is, you know, worry about finances, and the other part is, you know, giving up independence and that sort of thing.
On the financial side, people don't have a great understanding about how you pay for this stuff, right? You know, you don't need it until you need it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you need it, maybe you know where do you get the information? Everything's online now. I have something I'm writing up now about just asking people, what do they know about the cost of different options for long-term care? How much does a nursing home cost? How much does it cost to bring a home aide into, you know, to cook for you or run you to the store, that kind of thing? How much is assisted living? I can tell you the numbers. Nursing homes are about, on average, this is nationwide and it varies a lot. It's more expensive, for example, in the Northeast than it might be in the Midwest or something. But on average, nationwide, nursing homes are almost $7,000 a month, which, you know, that makes you swallow pretty hard. Yeah.
Most people that go into a nursing home, if they are not wealthy, if they live long enough, they will go on Medicaid.
Yes, exactly. And yeah. I'll tell you something about that, too, because that's another interesting financial piece, too. So nursing homes are almost $7,000. A part-time home health aide is going to cost you maybe $1,150 a month. This is, again, averages. Quite a bit less than that nursing home. Assisted living is maybe $3,400, $3,500 a month. So people aren't really aware of these, you know, how much is it going to cost? Do I have enough money? I mean, you know, do I have enough money to pay for it? So you've got people who maybe have money saved. How do you analyze whether you have enough saved, right? That's a very difficult thing. You don't know how long you're going to be in there, right? Maybe it's temporary. Maybe you think it's time to move permanently. And then the other thing is, as you mentioned, a lot of people don't understand what happens. So shockingly, a fairly large percentage of people think that Medicare pays for nursing homes. And it unless you're just going into a nursing home temporarily to, you know, because you're recovering from being in the hospital or something, Medicare does not cover nursing homes at all. And what happens is, as you mentioned, people run through their, you know, 401k assets or their savings account, and then they go on Medicaid. And, you know, but the research finds, even though we're talking about this now, the research finds that people don't really understand all this. How do you figure the financing out? Who pays for what? What does Medicare do? So these are very complicated, I think complicated decisions. And then, of course, on top of it, can you remain independent? Do you want to remain independent? All these psychological and emotional things that are going on. You know, my aunt and uncle who live in southern Indiana, he's in a nursing home now, and it's just been a really difficult process to make that happen. So the emotional barriers, how do you figure out the finances when you've got all this emotional stuff going on, too, I think is another.
Sure. And, of course, it's preferable if you're to go into some place like an independent living, which is, you know, far nicer than even assisted living, or definitely better than a nursing home. While you still can, and possibly prevent a crisis that might lead to a nursing home. Long-term care insurance won't even cover that. So that you
won't
have
even
to
cover it. Yep.
No.
Well,
so you
I'll
have
tell
to
you,
have,
my. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
Oh, I was going to say my grandmother, she died about I think 2006, but she lived to, bless her heart, to be 96. She, you know, she'd probably still be around, but she insisted on getting up on the ladder and fell. And yeah, and so, you know, now she could have gone into long-term care. She could have afforded it. But, you know, she wanted to stay home. And so, you know, I can't even begin. I don't know that much about it. I can't begin to try. How do you make these decisions? And when you've got a partner, maybe one's ready, one isn't, right? I mean, that probably happens a lot too, right? Or maybe one partner needs to go in, and then you might have this financial issue of, well, can we afford that? Right? So, you know, I don't know if you see that, but whether that would actually be, and maybe even if both partners agree, it would be better for one to go into some kind of, you know, a nursing home or something, which I think is what happened to my aunt and uncle in southern Indiana. And, you know, it's been a real financial strain for them. So, unfortunately, the research shows when you first retire, you tend to spend a lot of your money on a fun stuff, you know, traveling and things. And then over time, maybe spend less and less on that because you're not as mobile. And then you start spending more and more on health care and, you know, assisted living and that kind of thing. So it's a really big, it becomes a really big issue. And again, back to, you know, is that something, it's hard to deal with that. It's hard to deal with it, I think. One person suggested having something almost like a financial advance directive, which it was just a proposal, but it was an interesting idea to get somebody in there to help out, you know, when you know, you're not able to sort through some of the financial stuff. And again, this stuff is complicated, Mara, when you are, you know, at the top of your game. This can be really, really difficult to sort out. And my parents, they both, you know, sometimes the men, especially in older couples, the men will tend to do the financial stuff. My parents, what happened with them was my mother did the checking account and all the day-to-day stuff and paid the bills, and my dad, they didn't have a lot of money, a little bit of investing. My dad did all the investing, right? And so when my father died, my mother is completely competent and can balance the checkbook like nobody you've met. But she can't, you know, she wasn't comfortable with the investment side of it. So... So we actually hired a financial planner just to help her because I felt like I didn't have the time to do a good job of it. And I think it's maybe better sometimes to have a professional help do it. So that's another option. You know, that's another option.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good option.
Yeah, but you got to find somebody good and somebody you can really trust, you know.
Right.
So... You know, but yeah, but you know, I think just bringing in professionals, if you can afford it. Now, there are two kinds of people. Some people can afford it, and most of us can't, right? So, but if you can, that's definitely another option. You know, we've been talking about all these difficult decisions and a lot of good news, but one piece of research that's really interesting finds that, you know, often the wife lives longer, right? And one of the interesting this is a little sort of a little piece of what we've been talking about, but interesting nevertheless, when wives start to see their husbands failing, either physically or cognitively, becoming more impaired, the wives will start over time absorbing the financial stuff and learning about it. And in a way, they're almost subconsciously preparing themselves so that if their husband dies, they feel like they can take it over. So it's not like everything changes right away, right? So there's something going on with women where they start thinking about, okay, maybe I better pay a little bit more attention when he's talking about this or that, right? And starts to buy osmosis a little bit to pick it up, which I think that's interesting too. And I think positive thing, that can be a good thing.
Right, right. So have you found that once the spouse dies, the husband dies, that the women are pretty competent in terms of dealing with all the finances?
Well, they actually, the research showed they can actually get to the same level of financial literacy or financial competence as their husbands were. So, you know, so, you know, if you have to do it, you will. Right?
Right. Right.
So that can be a good thing. So it's not all bad. And also, you know, there's other research that by people interested in financial stuff. You know, I'm sure all your listeners can tell us more about this than I'm saying. But just, you know, this idea when you're younger, you're kind of quicker on your feet. You can quickly analyze things. You know, when you get older, your experience can benefit you, right? And maybe you can't think as quickly, but maybe you don't need to think as quickly away because you just know a lot more. And there's some research that shows that, you know, even people up into their 80s and 90s can do well on certain kinds of tests because that measure sort of this more, it's called crystallized intelligence, and I like to just call it wisdom, that you do better on those kinds of tests, right? So you know, it's not all negative, but there's a lot going on. A lot of things are changing. That's probably something you could speak to, right? I mean, that cognitively, a lot of things are changing at that age.
So therefore, because of their wisdom, older people can sometimes do better.
Maybe say, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure what the answer to this is, but maybe I should ask someone, or I've been through this situation before with, you know, the stock market going down, so I'm not going to panic. It's happened to me before, so I'm going to ride it out. I don't want to sell all my stocks when they're really low. You know, I've seen this happen. Whereas a young kid goes, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. I'm losing all my money, and they panic, right, and they don't have that experience. So, So it can, you know, so there are things that are compensating, as always the case.
Well, that's interesting because that reminds me of way back when I was in graduate school. Some of the research that I did in graduate school was about older adults and how their experience in a particular field. I looked at psychologists. I actually studied psychologists, but I had kind of jumped on in a broader study where they were different researchers were studying, people in different fields. And we all found that the older people who were more experienced actually did better than younger people, even though cognitively there might have been a little bit of, you know, dulling in terms of memory and that sort of thing. Younger people were sharper in their memory, but the older people actually did better because of their wisdom.
And what kinds of tests were they? What were they doing?
Well, we all had different. I don't know what the other fields. I created my own tests for mine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I had them looking at clinical cases and remembering information from the cases. And the young people remembered, you know, real specific information about the cases, but the older people did better at putting it all together and being able to give you a better picture of the case.
You know,
it's kind of interesting that also, you know, that makes sense that would kind of translate to being able to deal with finances, that, you know, they have more experience dealing with their finances.
Yes, absolutely. But again, I think the other thing, too, is especially when you've got a couple recognizing it, you know, dealing with it, can you perceive it in the other, you know, when you do things, see things changing. There was, you know, and going back to what I said earlier, there's this really interesting research. It's actually on my blog. Can I tell your readers the name of my blog?
Absolutely.
Great. It's called Squared Away, and it's at Boston College. So if you just Google Boston College and Squared Away, you can find it. It's pretty easy to find. But
I'm going to post it on my Facebook page and my website as well.
Thank you so much.
Link.
Mm-hmm. And if you take this show, I'd love to put it on my Facebook page as well. But it's good to remember, 80% of married older couples in 80% of couples, the person in charge of finances continued to manage them when they probably shouldn't. So it's important to kind of to remember that. And also, I have to say, you know, because male longevity is increasing quite a bit and pretty rapidly. But, you know, women do tend to live longer, but they're not the ones who do the finances. So, you know, something's gonna happen there, possibly. So that's another. I think that to some extent it can become quite an issue for women.
Right. And you talked earlier about hiring a financial planner if you can afford to do that, but another option, and I know this is the option that my own parents are using, and that is having somebody that you trust in your family who may be the financial power of attorney. So legally, they can't really step in until you're not competent to handle your finances, but they can get involved. If you ask them to get involved and help with planning, they can do that.
Yes, in fact, I was in my mother lives in Florida, and she's 78 now, and so we went to an attorney. You know, we just went. She doesn't have a lot. Really, I'm really serious. She really doesn't have that much money, but she wanted to get her financial affairs and her advance directive and all that stuff in order, and so. She signed over it's called a durable power of attorney to me, and so that if she feels like she can't take care of herself, I can do it. And you know, the other thing we've learned from the lawyer, which I did not know, is there's power of attorney and there's durable power of attorney, and power of attorney is not what you want. When you're in a situation where you're older, you want durable power of attorney because you want that your child or your trusted friend to take over when you're cognitively not able to do it. A power of attorney that doesn't work. It's got to be a durable power of attorney. So that's an important thing to learn. I didn't actually know about that.
It's important.
So
that is
yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mother, you know, we've done that for my mother. So I feel like. She's great. She's, you know, she's totally on her game and everything, but we're trying to kind of get ready for it ahead of time. Just, you know, she may be fine, you know, and a lot of people are fine. They don't need it, but everybody slows down. It's just a natural part of, you know, a part of aging. So memory, you know, your memory gets worse. So,
She starts making bad decisions, then you can actually step in and help her, and legally you'll have some power to do that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I can call the bank and say, you know, transfer the money over because this is too risky for her, or she's going to go into nursing, you know, assisted living and or nursing home, and we're going to pay so much every month or whatever. Exactly. So so I can take over and do it. And you know, and of course I'm not going to do it without talking to her, but I you know, the reason she picked me to do it is she knows I'm going to look out for her best interest and she can trust me, but I will have the legal power to do it, because if she didn't sign these documents, the lawyer told me, you go to the bank and say you're her Gail's daughter, they're going to say, so what? We're sorry, you can't do anything. So you really
exactly.
have to have this. Yeah.
So that's really a good thing to do. It's really important thing to do for preventing a disaster.
Yes.
We're going to take a real quick break. Don't hang up. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to play a commercial. It might give people time to give a call if they have any questions or to send an email with their questions. And we're going to come right back.
Great.
Okay, so if people have any questions, go to your phone, 855-345-4720, or email me or tweet me. I'll read the questions over the air, Dr. Mara at drmaracarpell.com, or Twitter, MaraEK. And we will be right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Carpell. We'll be back after words from our sponsors.
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient. And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about Essential Body Wear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com. And have a perky day. Gravity.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show. Please visit us on the web at www.drmaricarpel.com.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaracarpel.com. And I am speaking with retirement and finance researcher at Boston College, Kim Blanton, and we're talking about finance and dementia. And if you have any questions, please feel free to give a call at 855-345-4720 or send a tweet to M-A-R-A-E-K or an email to Dr. Mara at drmaracarpel.com. So, Kim, I did receive an email. It's a little bit unrelated to what we're talking about, but it's a finance question.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, do you think the Bitcoin will be a short trend?
That's great. That's great. You know, I'm not a real expert in the Bitcoin, but The one kernel of the Bitcoin that I think possibly could be to have some real staying power is, you know, in some ways, increasingly we're all using Bitcoins, right? We never see our cash anymore. Pay at it for a transaction at a with your cell phone when you leave the grocery store. You know, I transfer money from my bank account to pay my utility bills, and So, but Bitcoin per se, I honestly, it's just not really my area. I don't know that much about it. But I think in a way, you know, and there are other things going on. People who play games online, they deal in these sort of funky, almost like monopoly money currencies, except that, you know, they do have some value online. And so I don't know if it'll be in the form of Bitcoin or not, but I don't know if it's really necessarily a passing phase. It may not be, or it may morph into something else. I don't think it's inconceivable that it wouldn't. But I don't think I better say any more about that because I don't know that much about it. So.
Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit more about finance and older people. So any other suggestions about what people can do to prevent disaster? We talked about, you know, having a durable power of attorney, which I think is really important. I did have an elder law attorney on the show when I was on Austin Radio, and he talked about the durable power of attorney as, like, really necessary. And we talked about learning, trying to learn the finances if, you know, dealing with the finances if you're the partner who doesn't typically do that.
Yeah.
Are there other suggestions?
Yes, I think that's a really good idea. And, you know, that can be tough because if one person's carried on this role, trying to sort of horn in on their territory can probably be a little bit tricky. But, you know, I've interviewed a woman, Kathleen Burns Kingsbury, and she wrote a book, How to Give Financial Advice to Couples. And one of the things she talked about a lot is, money, it symbolizes a lot of things. It's a very meaningful thing. It's about security. It's about respect. It's about power. Maybe some people use it to express love. And money is very emotional, but it's important to for a couple, especially as they age, and say, you know, we don't know who's going to cognitively going to decline first, or, you know, maybe neither of us will, but if one of us does, what are we going to do? This is true of couples of any age, but it almost seems just as important, if not more important than for, say, a young couple starting out, is to just sit down and talk about these financial issues, because they're important issues. They matter to both couples, and, you know, some people just don't even like to talk about money. Some couples don't have conversations about money, and a lot of the couples' advisors say that's really the starting place, Mara, before you get the durable power of attorney with the kids, and, you know, before you hire the financial planner, and all that is to just sit down and talk about it, I guess, because it can be an issue, and, you know, there is research showing, absolutely, financial performance declines for older adults. And I am not talking about Alzheimer's and dementia. I'm just talking about the natural aging process. It's very important to just talk about it. And I think that's probably the best place to start, I guess.
Right. And that would make sense to talk about it even when you're younger, because there's no guarantees in life that your partner is going to live. As long as you know, I mean, it's not good to only have one partner know what's going on financially in the household.
Yes, that's exactly right. And like I said, you know, it's the man often, especially in older couples, is the one who does the financial stuff. This is, you know, but the woman may be the one who ends up living longer, so you've got a kind of a mismatch there, right?
Right.
So recognizing that, and you know, maybe trying to get used to the idea of sharing responsibility for this, which can be tough. You know, if you've been married for 40 years, changing how you're doing things can be hard too. But it can have really, really important consequences. You know, the worst case is fraud. You know, somebody's managing the money and they're getting ripped off. And I used to be a financial reporter, so I saw plenty of fraud. And, you know, it's just devastating to lose the little bit amount of money that you saved up in your working life and that you're really going to need. You know, you both kind of have to be watching out for each other because your interests are shared. A couple's interests are shared. So both be, you know, this is a joint project. But like I said, money gets really complicated. It's about power, right? It can be about power.
How can people prevent fraud from happening to them?
Well, I'll tell you what I tell my mother. My mom's online all the time on her email and your friends. I say, if you get an email from anybody, you don't know them, and the word money is in there, you just delete it. Don't even read it. If you get offers to go to free lunches, right, so they're going to pitch you financial products, don't waste your time. You know, those are not ways for, you know, stuff that flies in over the transom is not the kind of financial offer that you should even be considering ever in your life, and especially when you're older, and maybe you're not quite as sharp about analyzing it. Another piece of advice, I actually wrote a brief about fraud and senior fraud, and it's becoming just a bigger and bigger problem, partly because of online, partly because baby boomers are aging, so there are more older people than there ever have been. Another thing I tell my mother, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. You know, just don't go near it. If you don't know the person, or sometimes you do know the person. It could be somebody, there have been frauds against seniors, somebody in the church who everybody trusts, turns out to be, they're offering something, you know, my brother-in-law is doing this great business deal and you're just going to love it and you would not believe how much money he's making. There's somebody in your church. Sometimes people will come into a church knowing that they can build trust in a population and then rip people off in the church. So, you know, you really need to think really clearly about who's going to run my finances and who can I trust, and stay with that person that you can trust and that you have a track record with and that you know that you can trust them because your money's still there. And
right.
when people come in over the transom with really good deals and, you know, things like that, that's, you should run the other way as fast as you can, basically.
Yeah. A real common scam going around, and I've gotten emails like this numerous times, two different ones. One is that you just came into a whole bunch of money,
mm-hmm.
and all you need is spend this amount of money to release it. That's
right.
Ridiculous. Right?
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
It's just people who fall for it, they'll fall for that.
Yeah.
Not expecting to inherit money, then you probably didn't inherit any money.
Right. Why is somebody who you don't know or barely know, why do they need you to release some money from an inheritance that you don't know about, right?
Right. And the other common one that I have seen is an email from someone that you know whose email has probably been hacked. Saying, I'm stuck in a foreign country and I don't know how I'm going to get home. Please send me money.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, in fact, I got one of those. You're not going to believe this. I got one of those from my mother's financial planner because I email her too. You know, sometimes I'll talk to her about my mom or something, and my mom makes the decisions, but I'll just chat with her and ask her some of the kind of technical stuff since it's my area. And I got an email. And she said, I'm in London and I'm stuck. I don't have any money. Can you wire me some money? And I thought, first of all, I know this woman. She would never do that. Why would she contact a professional relationship, right? I mean, if you think about it for 10 minutes, you know, before you do something like that, call the person. They're probably sitting at home watching television or something.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, So don't email them back, because if it's somebody fraudulent on the other end, right? And look, Mara, I have to tell you, we all may, you know, any of us can be vulnerable to these mistakes. I live in Boston. I'm literally 3 miles from Harvard. A former Globe reporter who I know wrote a story for the New Yorker magazine about a Harvard professor who got an email, and these have become pretty common. A lot of people have heard about these, but he got an email from someone in somewhere in Nigeria or something saying, I have, if you give me your bank account number, I have $1 million I will transfer to you for safekeeping or something. And he gave the guy his bank account number, and he got completely ripped off. So, you know, this can happen. This can happen to anybody. And again, once you know that financial performance declines as your cognitive sharpness declines, we know that, and we also know that if you don't recognize that you're not as sharp as you used to be, you might be overconfident and making bad decisions and thinking they're good decisions. So there's a lot of interesting psychological stuff that's going on. So one of the things I think people need to think about, and I think, well, I need to recognize this too. I recently got married, and, you know, I just have to recognize at some point I really am not going to be as sharp as I was, and it's, that's the way it goes for all of us, right? And
yeah.
So how am I going to deal with that? So, but if it looks too good to be true, it is. I guarantee you.
Well, Kim, we have already run out of time. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
So,
well, I always enjoy talking to you. You have a great show.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. It's always interesting when you're on. And, again, for people who want to read your blogs, great blogs, a lot of really good information, they can go to my website, and the link will be there, or my Facebook page, or they could Google Squared Away blog, right, at Boston
College. How would they find your website, Mara?
They could go to drmaracarpel.com.
Oh, great. drmaracarpel.com. That's easy.
Yep. And I will be posting all the information from this show later this evening. So that link will be there.
I'll watch for it.
All right. Great. Well, thank you so much.
And thank you for having me. I really appreciate your having me. Thank you. I enjoyed
it. Yes. I enjoyed it, too. You have a good evening, and come back again soon, okay?
I'd love to. Take care. We'll be in touch.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, so we're going to take another very quick break. And after the break, don't go anywhere, because after the break, one of the legendary, heroic Tuskegee Airmen, the World War II heroes that were portrayed in George Lucas's movie Red Tails, Captain William Gray, will be joining us from right here in Texas. And then first violist for the New York Pop Orchestra, Dr. Karen Olson. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Carpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmaracarpel.com. And now joining us on the phone from Central Texas, one of the legendary heroic Tuskegee Airmen, the World War II heroes that were portrayed in the movie Red Tails, Captain William Gray is joining us. And Captain Gray, who is with a friend of this show and a regular on the show, Master Sergeant Will Williams. So good evening, Captain Gray. Good evening, Will.
Good evening.
Good evening. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. Will, did you do your run today?
You know, I started out, but I never finished, Doc. I wimped out.
Oh, wow. It was a hot day.
Well, I couldn't finish. Some things came up, and I couldn't finish, but I will the next time.
Okay, well, you know, you still were there, so that's what counts, right?
Oh, yeah. All the kids saw me there. All the troops saw me there, so that's what counts.
That's what counts. So you're there with Captain William Gray. Good evening, Captain Gray.
Good evening.
So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Captain?
Well, first of all, most people don't know that the Tuskegee Airmen had another group of flyers, and the unit was the 477th Bomb Group. They flew B-25s.
Uh-huh.
They had navigators and bombardiers. That was a bombardier. It was not a red tail. The 477th.
Okay.
Was never reached any prominence because the war ended before we got into combat.
Okay. So you were a bombardier?
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't you tell listeners a little bit about what it was like when you first entered the service? especially being a person of color in the military at the time of World War II?
Well, I'm originally from Philadelphia, and I got drafted, and I left home in December of 1943, and by February 1944, I was in Biloxi, Mississippi. That was for basic training. And for the first 4 or 5 weeks, we were allowed to leave post. But after we got to get off post, there's only one part of town we could go into. But that was Mississippi back in 1944.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what was it like in the military, though? What was it like on the base?
We were segregated. We were way off on one end of the field, at Keesler Field in Biloxi. There were two squadrons. One was the 1169th. This is the one I was in, and that was mostly made up of men who'd been to school, who could read and write, and who were going into either cadets or something else of that nature. The other squadron was the 1170th. They were young men, mostly from the South, who had limited education, and they were going to use them between the panics and things. First, they had to teach them to read and write. We trained separately. We ate separately. We did everything separately from the white troops. We went on bivouac once, I remember, and it was like 4 days out in the field. We fired our weapons and had a good time in the rain. And on the march back, we had a habit of singing, and we were marching. We were in the back of the parade coming back, and we were singing, and we were walking faster and marching faster. And the white troops, they made us stop and sit by the side of the road while the white troops went through before we could go on, because they didn't want us to enter the base before them. So that's basically the way it was back then. When we went to town, we had our own bus. It was a place we got on the bus. We had our own MPs, and they would take care of us in town because there was only one part of town we could go into. That gives you an idea of what it was like.
Right. So, you know, for some of our listeners, they may not be aware of who were the Tuskegee Airmen. What is the significance of that title?
Okay. Historically, the Tuskegee Airmen were born in November 1918. The Treaty of Versailles. And in that treaty, the Germans were forbidden to fly manned aircraft. They broke that treaty and started their Luftwaffe. And President Roosevelt saw that, and so he started a training program for young men in college to become only familiar with flying. And this was many colleges, and of those many colleges, six were traditionally black colleges. One of which was Tuskegee. Now, nothing of it, and we got involved in World War II, and they had the flying training program, but we were not allowed in that program. And a young man from Howard University filed suit against the War Department to be allowed to take flying training, and as a result of that, they started the flying training program in the Army Air Corps, and they picked Tuskegee to be the place where they would fly. 1942, they started a flying training program with 22 officers. I beg your pardon, 22 men. They graduated 5. And that was basically the way they would go. They graduated about 20% of the men who started. So all the flying was done at Tuskegee until the transition from P-6s to P-40s. That was done in South Carolina. As far as the bombers were concerned, which came along later, they started their training at Tuskegee, and then they went up to Selfridge Field, Michigan, Freedom Field, Indiana, Gardner Field, Kentucky, and ended up in Lockhorn Air Base outside of Columbus, Ohio. The Tuskegee Airmen itself the organization to which I now belong. But it came about much later when a group of people got together and decided, well, maybe we should honor these people. And they decided to call it TM. They're not associated with the military, per se, although they do allow us on the on basis. It's on for a day. No, it isn't. Okay. Mostly now, the head of the organization are former civilians or former Air Force officers or Army officers or Army enlisted or Air Force enlisted or civilians. There are a group of us called Deltas, and they're documented original Tuskegee Airmen, of which I am one. We were the ones who received the Congressional Gold Medal several years ago in Washington, and I have one. And I think my chapter, I think now has 7 DOTAs. I don't think there are much more than 200 of us left in the whole country.
Wow. So what was the reason that you received the Congressional Gold Medal?
Well, a couple of congressmen put forth a bill to honor the Tuskegee Airmen. And that was mm-hmm. what we got.
Okay. Because you ended up, because the Tuskegee Airmen ended up being a group of, you know, heroes during World War II. I mean, you mentioned that you ended up not going into combat, but there were many who did, correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the original plan.
Well, it was for the pilots.
Okay.
The pilots was going to combat. They started off with the 99th Pursuit Squadron. They originally went overseas by boat, and they went to North Africa. And they flew cover for the Army in North Africa. Later, they formed the 332nd Fighter Group, which consisted of the 100th, the 301st, and 302nd Fighter Squadrons. They went to Italy, and then the 99th came from Africa to Italy and was the only fighter group in all of Europe that had 4 fighter squadrons. That was unique. They transitioned from P-40s, P-39s, P-47s, and finally the Red Tail P-51, which made them very famous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so the Red Tails were a group of Tuskegee Airmen.
Well, they were the Tuskegee Airmen.
Okay. Okay, and they flew some pretty heroic missions.
Yes, they did.
Mhm. Where were those missions? Where did they fly into?
They flew out of Italy, and they flew bomber missions to Germany. Into Berlin, they flew over Ploiești oil fields in Romania, and any place else the Army decided they needed bombers.
Uh-huh.
Their job was to protect the bombers from German fighters.
Okay. Okay.
It should be noted that the Tuskegee Airmen were the first ones that encountered and shot down the German jet aircraft. This is the first operational jet fighter aircraft.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. So what are you doing these days? I heard that you're doing a lot of speaking and that you're focused on educating children.
The program with Tuskegee Airmen is to assist deserving young kids with their college education. We also, pardon me, are attempting to indoctrinate or familiarize young people with flying. There have been several young kids who've flown cross country. A young teenager flew from California to Florida about 3 years ago, stopped here in Austin. But she had a licensed pilot with her. But it gives you an idea of what the program is. We have a chapter up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that is very operational as far as flying training is concerned. Our other objectives are to work with community actions. We participate in various community activities when we can, and that's what we do.
And Tuskegee University is still in existence. It's still active.
Well, very much so.
So, how can people learn more about Tuskegee University and also about the story of the Tuskegee Airmen during World War II?
Well, you can go online and pull up Tuskegee Institute, and I don't know if you have to do edu or what. And for the Tuskegee Airmen, go in and pull up TuskegeeAirmen.com. And,
okay.
You can pick whatever subject you want.
Okay. Okay, and it tells the whole story, huh?
It should. You have to pick out what you want.
Okay, okay. So, before we go, anything else that I missed that you want to let listeners know about?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, so... thank you so much for coming on for Memorial Day, and happy Memorial Day to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your service.
You're quite welcome.
And Will, you have anything to add? Anything going on?
Yes, ma'am. We always have a lot going on. We want to thank the School for the Blind in Austin. 10 kids from School for the Blind just did a fundraiser, and they raised $1,000 for one of the projects they were working on. And that was their first fundraiser, and they did amazing. So I just want to send a shout-out. And then we have Veterans Outdoors, who's doing some amazing stuff. We have Blue Star Moms doing some amazing stuff. Heroes Night Out had their fourth annual barbecue yesterday. 1,500 people showed up. So, I'm just going to say about the different organizations.
Yeah. So, anything going on tomorrow from Memorial Day?
Tomorrow, no, just going to attend some services. But other than that, just, you know, I've met a lot of good young soldiers. I just came back from Fort Bragg, some outstanding soldiers that I met, and everybody just keep on working and doing good work.
Great, great. Well, Will, I'd love to have you come back on soon and fill us in on everything that's going on.
Yes, I'm listening.
And you're planning for the July 4th parade in Round Rock?
Yes, ma'am. As a matter of fact, I went to Fort Hood a couple weeks ago. We're going to have about 300 soldiers from Fort Hood at Round Rock this year. And, of course, we're going to have you. We got your car ready to set up.
Oh, boy.
We're going to take you to the VIP tent, and you'll sit with the VIPs where you should be, and then just enjoy the parade.
Very nice. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
I am too. I can't wait.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Will, for coming on tonight, and thank you for bringing Captain Gray on the show, and thank you, Will, for your service. The military and all of your services in the community as well. You know, you do so many good things for children and for veterans and veterans' families. So,
if you enjoy, it's not work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, you have a very good evening, okay? And we'll be speaking to you soon.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, stick around. We're going to take another break, and then we'll be back with the internationally recognized violist, recording artist, composer, holistic healer, and first violist for the New York Pop Orchestra, whose CD, Timeless Being, has been ranked number one on multiple charts. Dr. Karen Olson will be joining us, and we'll be playing some of her music. So I'm right back. Thank you. And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And the music that we were just playing is a piece called Ascending Souls, written and performed by our next guest, the internationally recognized violist, recording artist, composer, holistic healer, and first violist for the New York Pop Orchestra, Dr. Karen Olson, who is now joining us once again from New York. Good evening, Karen.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me here. It's quite an honor.
Welcome back to the show. I want to just let you know before we continue that there's a slight delay when we talk to each other like this. So,
okay. Okay.
Please be aware.
All right.
So Karen, why don't you, you know, for those who didn't hear you on my show last time, maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your musical history, your professional history.
Oh, sure. I took an immediate liking and love for the viola when I was a teenager, and my father was a minister, and I didn't come from a musical family, so I think it's one reason that I have kind of combined the spiritual aspect in all different styles of music in what I'm doing now. And I went to Juilliard and got a bachelor's and master's there, and it was a really inspiring experience. And I got a master's at Yale also and was able to explore more of some of the intellectual aspects of music that I hadn't really looked at before. And then I got a PhD in performance from NYU and have developed some healing modalities like theta healing, and I'm a Reiki master.
Uh-huh.
And so I really connect with the energy in music. And
Can you?
Yeah.
Okay. Go on.
Oh, I'm just always exploring new things that I can do with music and rhythm and ways I can share it, and I'm just very passionate about the effect of healing that music has and that it's had in my life.
And you're now performing with the New York Pop Orchestra?
Yes, it's so much fun. I've been able to do that for many years now, and I've played with many of the big stars, the Rat Pack and all the other ones, even before I was with the New York Pops, and we've had tours to Japan and many parts of the world that were really a lot of fun with that orchestra. And we have a Carnegie Hall series, and in the end of April, we had a gala that included many stars like Patti LuPone and Martin Short. He was very funny, and many great stars, and it was such great energy just watching the big stars perform and being a part of it. And Carnegie Hall is usually sold out for our concerts, and I think almost every concert this season we had a standing ovation, but this concert there was about at least four showstoppers where in the middle of the concert the whole audience of thousands just stood up roaring. So it's exciting.
Wow.
To be there.
Wow. That is exciting.
Yeah, very fun.
And it's so exciting to play at Carnegie Hall anyway.
It is, yeah. It's, besides all the legends there, the acoustics are so fantastic. You can hear yourself really well no matter how big a group it is. It's a great place, special place.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we had somebody who played at Carnegie Hall a couple of weeks ago on the show.
Oh, great.
Yeah, Augusta Festa. Augusta Festa, yep.
Oh.
So, and it's all, you know, what's that old joke? How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Yeah, that's right. You practice.
Practice, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big. So, what are you doing these days? You're playing with the New York Pops Orchestra. And what are some of the other things that you're doing?
Oh, I have several projects. I'm developing a concert that I'm calling Now and Then, calling it Heartfelt and Fun Favorites with Sounds of Today. So I'm taking pieces that people would know and putting my own flavor to it with world music sounds and improvising within it. And I'm quite excited. I'm going to be doing it locally, and then I started working with an agent, and I'll be doing some tours the following season. So kind of looking to bring in a broader audience. So it should be a lot of fun.
So you're locally meaning in New York? You're doing that in New York right
Yeah,
now?
In New York. Yeah, in this area, the tri-state area. And I'm working on a method for sound healing that I'd like to do with a blog and webinars and a book and using music and rhythm exercises, interactive ones, so people can experience the ideas and shifts. So that's exciting for me. I want to really see how it create it with the people. And so that's going to be very exciting for me. And I'm working with a national music campaign for a major healing organization. That's just starting, so I'll have more about that on my website or my Facebook page as that develops.
Okay. So you're working on a national, you said, a healing campaign?
Yeah, it's an organization that's a pretty big one, and they asked me to do some music for it that would be a part of it. So I'm it's just very early, but it would be really exciting to see, kind of working on bringing my spiritual and musical dreams and passions and ideas into reality, kind of merging the two. That's one of my
very
goals
nice.
In my life, to find more and more ways to see things in reality and being really in a flow, being in a flow. And I'm realizing I'm starting to play for life events, really for celebrations and ceremonies, for weddings, and also for end-of-life vigils and everything in between. So that's fun to do. And what else am I? My CDs. I have a new one I'm finishing up called Convergence with this great cellist I got to work with. It was really a great honor. He works with the Dalai Lama a lot, Michael Fitzpatrick. And that's just the final stages. And then I'm going to do another CD this summer that'll have more songs from the concert I'm putting together. And I'm going to play for Amma. She's coming. The Hugging Saint is coming to New York July 5th to 7th, and I'll be playing for her. I did that before, and it's a really, really amazing experience,
nice.
Seeing that energy.
Yeah, get a hug for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you
never
can
want
explain,
to miss that.
Maybe you can explain to our listeners who Alma is.
Oh, she's this amazing woman from India that has this incredible gift that she shares of love and just divine presence and of giving. And she tours the world and she gives hugs, and you just feel like the presence of everything when she's hugging you. And she can hug, I think, 20,000 people in a day. She can go for maybe 8 hours with getting up to go. She doesn't get up to eat or go to the bathroom or anything. She just sits there, and it goes all through the night. It's just amazing experience. And I think I was reading that she gave $8 million for some flood victims and $2 million for Hurricane Katrina. She really, really, really is generous, and the money goes to help. She has an orphanage and many great things. I feel a deep connection with her and just would love to be able to give as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds great.
Yeah.
So now, Karen, before you came on, we were playing your song, Ascending Souls. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. That was one of my earlier CDs, and I was able to record that with David Darling, who has a Grammy Award now, and he was playing the piano, and it was very deep experience for me. I created the chords and then improvised the melody, and I really do find a connection with that piece, and amongst my healing experiences is my connection with animals. I love animals and my own pets. And I had a cat who was very, very sick and was looking like he could be passing away. And I just happened to put my station on Pandora on my iPad, which usually shuts off after a little bit of time. And I just put it on the table, and he could hardly move, but he got on top of it and sat there for about a day on top of it, and he became well. And
wow.
It was really, like, the healing in action. It was so great. My pets, fortunately, they they like my music. And my other one time I had a pet was passing away and I was playing that song. So I really do feel a connection with that song and some kind of a divine shift that we can all have in any moment.
You could hear it. It's a very spiritual song.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's kind of deep. And music can express all moods.
Now, we're going to play another one of your songs right now, Moving Masquerade.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. So we'll play... That was violist Dr. Karen Olson, who is joining us on the phone. So, Karen, can you tell us a little bit about that piece?
Oh, sure. I created that piece in the moment in the studio, and that's on the CD Timeless Being, and my CD Scenes of the Soul is very deep and meditative, and I really wanted to express different feelings in music, which, of course, music does. Is expresses mm-hmm. what we feel and where we're at, and I had a lot of fun. I was blessed with using an amazing viola at the time. It was an old Italian instrument that was worth $500,000, and I was very connected to it, and I had it was a layering process I do in the studio, and the first time I played that and improvised it, something went wrong with the engineer, and we had to redo it, and I was, like, kind of upset, like the fishing stories, like the best one gets away, but I did it again. It was a lot of fun. I feel, I remember doing that, and I hope that people can feel joy
mm-hmm.
in that piece.
Now, that CD, Timeless Being, I read that one was ranked number one on several charts.
Oh, yes. It did. It had a good response with that. There's some New Age, called Zone, the New Age report is that keep track of those things and the different stations. And
uh-huh.
Yes. And I was able to do that with Cafe, a really amazing percussionist. That was a really great blessing. Well, as I said, he's from Brazil, and he has this great, great connection with all the rhythm and music, and we've had a lot of fun playing together, and he has played with great people like Steve Winwood and all different places
mm.
in the world. He's traveled with different artists, so that was a lot of fun working with him.
Uh-huh. So, Karen, are you ever coming to Texas?
Oh, I would love to. I would love to do that.
I'm sure that Austin would be the perfect place for you to bring.
Yeah.
Some of
your... I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, please do. And then speak to Art. He can
That would be really fantastic. It's beautiful, all the work that you're doing.
Well,
and reaching
you.
Out to so many people. I love the whole concept of aging and time and how really we're timeless, and it's all being where we are now and living to the fullest.
That's right. And we're timeless beings.
Really being in peace. And I've had a chance to work with some Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and cancer patients, and I have learned so much from them about really letting go and acceptance and surrender and putting my mm-hmm. ego aside and really listening and being fully present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And each moment, that's what we all have as our gift.
That's right. That's right. That's all we have is this moment.
That's all, yes. And it's hard to remember that sometimes, and it's very powerful when I do.
Mm-hmm. So Karen, it sounds like you're doing so many things. How can people find out what you're doing and where they can come hear you and see you perform or get your CDs or where can they go to do that?
Oh, thank you. I have my website. It's www.karenolson.com, and the main thing to remember is that it's KarenOlson.com.
Okay.
And then I have my Facebook fan page, which I'm working. One of my goals is to be a little more active on that, and it's Karen Olson Viola. So it's my name, KarenOlson Viola, and Facebook, and that would be really, really great. It's really beautiful how we can connect in cyberspace and virtual ways and spiritual ways, and all be together.
And your calendar is on your website.
Yes, I need to update it, but it is there, and my different programs and my CDs. You can hear some of my clips from all of them, and that's really
that's great.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so people can learn about your healing and your music and come see you perform and listen, and great. I'm going to post that link on my website as well and on my Facebook page.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That'll be on later tonight when I do my posting on this show. So if people didn't get their pen and paper out in time, they can just go to my website and it'll all be there later. So,
beautiful.
So much again, Karen, for coming
on. Thank you. It's so special that you do this, and it's a great weekend, Memorial Day weekend, so thank you that we all have good memories to share.
And I hope to meet you sometime when I'm up in New York.
Yes, and I'm going to work on making it to Texas. It's a small world.
That would be great.
Thank you so much. Blessings.
And Art just sent the message that Antonin says hello.
Oh, yes, good friend, yes. He's been a great help to me. So thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a good evening. Enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, thank you. You too, and to everyone. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have already come to the end of the show. Really fun, bye. What's coming up next week. You can see go. Tune in next Sunday, time. We'll be back in beautiful Texas with another packed show. And joining me will be writer, former editorial director for Veg News, and author of the recent book, How to Be Vegan, Tips, Tricks, and Strategies for Cruelty-Free Eating, Living, Dating, Travel, Decorating, and more. Elizabeth Castorio will be joining us from California to talk about her book, which is really a book for all of you out there who have either thought about becoming vegan or if you just want to eat more plants. in general. And we'll also be joined by musician and educator of percussion and music anthropology, Matthew Berger, who will be joining us from Portland to talk about his music as well as some of his research into music anthropology and musicology, including the psychology of rhythm. And we'll hear some of his music. And Laura Galazunas will be back to join us to report in from the retirement paradise south of the border, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from this show and about upcoming shows, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com. That's drmarakarpel.com. And also be sure to follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. And all of those links that we talked about on tonight's show with my guests will be on my website and my Facebook page later this evening. And tonight's show was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Coastal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by Sonia Das, the Bra Lady, and by Live Oak Legacy. And special thanks to my guests, Kimberly Blanton, Captain William Gray, Master Sergeant Will Williams, and Dr. Karen Olson. And thank you, Art. Happy Memorial Day. Thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring week. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone, and be safe.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show. Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com.